Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill. I'm sitting in for Dr. Jean Youngblood, and it's my honor and privilege to do so. And again, I want to mention the reason I'm here for Dr. Youngblood is that he has had a hospitalization in the family, and they need our prayers. It's his son. And I would ask you to pray for a number of reasons. One, prayer is effective, and prayer works. The fervent, effectual prayer of the righteous availeth much. And I would encourage you to pray for Dr. Youngblood's son, Gene. We have seen some amazing, encouraging results since he has been in the hospital. We want to pray that he will soon leave the hospital and have a full recovery. Just before the break, I was talking about masks and what those masks mean. But I want to shift gears just a little bit now and talk about gun rights in Florida. Gun rights is an issue that is important not only here in Florida, but also throughout our nation. And I understand we have a caller on the line, Glenda White, who would like to talk about gun rights or anything else you would like to talk about, Glenda. Glenda, welcome to
the
show.
Hi, how you
Glad
doing?
You called in.
Hey, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic. How are you, Glenda?
Well, I am fine. My name is Glenda White, and I am the event director for the 912. And my husband, Royal, is the president of the Winter Haven 912. And he's actually working his politics stuff on his computer right now, so he's just listening. However, we have been going around the state since 2018, since the passage of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas law, which is a pretty good law, except for the risk protection order part, which is it equates to red flag laws in Florida, and it's certainly not acceptable. So that's something that I would very much like to discuss today.
Yes.
But first, I want to say that I'm a great fan.
Glenda, let me interrupt
Representative
you, please,
Hill.
If I may.
He has been one of the
Glenda,
to anyone listening.
Glenda.
He has been one of the outstanding representatives that Florida has seen.
Hello, Glenda.
Hey.
Glenda, let me interrupt you just for a second, please.
Sure.
As you stated, that you're with the Winter Haven 912 group. First of all,
yes, sir.
Tell the audience, what is the Winter Haven 912 group?
Well, we are a conservative-minded group. We're a Tea Party patriot-like, but we were actually born out of the 912 movement that was started by Glenn Beck in answer to 9/11, but we quickly morphed into a conservative political group rather than a do good for the community group. And we have been fighting ever since to educate the public. We are quite active as far as getting hold of representatives, doing public demonstrations such as flag waves, and we help candidates that we endorse. Right now we're actively working for Sergio Ortiz, who is running for the 9th Congressional District against Darren Soto, who is our current congressman, unfortunately. And we are also in favor of another great Florida representative, Anthony Sabatini, who is now running for Congress. And it looks like he's going to be running for that, for the new district, once the lines are redrawn. But that's what we do. We have a mailing list of over 500 people around the state. And we have an active, I guess, I don't know, about 55 average show up every Thursday night to our meetings in Winter Haven. And apparently we're quite well known. We did a presentation at the quarterly RPOF state committee persons meeting that happened to be in Champions Gate this time on the RPO laws. And we're always shocked as to how many people do not know that Florida has red flag laws. We are the only red state in the union that has red flag laws. And
okay, Glenda,
it's because Stoneman Douglas.
Glenda, tell us about that red flag law, which we have here in Florida, which was put in place shortly after the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting by a Republican-controlled House, Senate, and at that time, Governor Rick Scott signed it into law. Tell us about that red flag law, and then tell us about the presentation that you made this past weekend at the quarterly Republican Party of Florida meeting.
All right. The RPO law was passed 3 weeks after the Parkland shooting, so now we all know that the Florida legislation can move if it wants to. They just choose not to. However, in this case, it was authored, passed by both houses, and signed into law in 3 weeks by then-Governor Rick Scott. And what the law does is it ruins due process for Floridian gun owners in particular. But what it does is allows someone to just make a claim that a person might be a threat who happens to be a gun owner. The law enforcement officer involved then can take a request to a judge, ask for a seizure order to be issued, and a seizure order can be issued without the knowledge of the respondent. They never know anything about it until a sheriff's deputy or a police officer shows up to their door saying, hey, we're here to seize your guns. There is no due process. You are not allowed a hearing. If you're low income, you are not provided a lawyer. You have a hearing 2 weeks after to determine whether you are not a threat. So you have to prove that you're not the threat, not the other way around. So the idea of innocent until proven guilty is completely gone in this instance. So then if they decide to go ahead and hold on to your weapons, they can keep them for up to a year, and then there's a hearing. So once your guns are seized, you instantly go on a state and national criminal database so that you cannot leave the state to go buy weapons. Now, it's considered a civil procedure, but the fact that you're now on a state and criminal database ties you in to criminals, and people who know that you've had your weapons seized are going to perceive you as a criminal anyway.
Now, Glenda,
so
this
nothing,
is terrible.
Nothing.
Glenda, this is terrible that this is happening. What you have described is actually happening in Florida. I know part of your presentation has the numbers of people that who have had their individual civil rights removed, rights that are guaranteed to us by the Constitution. What do those numbers look like?
Approaching 7,000 now since 2018. And unfortunately, my county, embarrassingly enough, Polk County, leads the way. We have consistently, but we have stats available on every single county in the state on what they're doing on RPOs, how many have been issued, how many have been refused by the court, and so forth. So some counties like Escambia, for instance, are doing very well. They're really apparently not much use for this up there. Now, in blue counties, if you look at state statistics, you're going to see that there are seizures. quite a lot of them, and very few are refused. And my assumption is not so much that there is a huge population of threat in these counties, but there are liberal judges who like gun control, and so they don't refuse them. So people who have done nothing are supposed to, maybe they might do something in the future, then have their rights removed. So if you are the victim of a crime within that time, the state does not say, well, you know, we'll help you out. No, there's no protection for a person who's had their weapons removed. They do not state in the law how guns are to be stored by law enforcement, how they're to be cared for. Will the citizen be made whole if the guns are stolen, damaged, or lost, especially for those who have collections of... Yes, Royal?
It's not only guns, here. It's not only guns. A seizure also includes ammunition, all accoutrements related to your firearms, and if you have a concealed carry permit, your permit as well.
That's right. Your concealed carry permit is taken along with all your weapons and all accessories. So if
Glenda, I know that you and your organization are fighting against this terrible law. And you also know that when I was in the House of Representatives, I filed in two separate sessions to have this law revoked, this risk protection order, and also the fact that 18 to 20-year-olds cannot purchase a long gun, to remove that also from this terrible law. So, and I know that Representative Anthony Sabatini, who you are hoping to get him elected to Congress, also brought back a bill when I was no longer in office to have that repealed. So that is what is needed. Tell the audience what they can do to help get this terrible law repealed.
Yeah, well, that, and plus I want to discuss the tyrannical way that Republican leadership acts when somebody files something that they don't like. And what they did to you and now have done to Mr. Sabatini is inexcusable. And every single Republican listening to this needs to be calling their representative and Republican leadership and asking them why they think it's okay to order people that they're going to vote one way, that they're going to file this or not, or they're going to be ostracized, taken off their committees, taken out of leadership positions, and nobody will talk to them. I think Anthony Sabatini and my own representative, Sam Killebrew, were put out into what they call the timeout office this year, which is, I guess, away from the general population of rep offices, but it's because they did things that the leadership didn't like. But the loss of rights is scary. The ramifications to the First Amendment are scary. This law... virtually anybody can make a claim against a gun owner as being a threat. So for people who have political enemies, a neighbor who doesn't like them, an ex-spouse who's mad at them, all they have to do is call law enforcement and provide a claim of threat. And they'll be out, you know, to discuss the matter and stuff like that. But if they think that one is necessary, they will go and take a request to a judge who can then, so the ramification is, if you have a politician that doesn't like you, all of a sudden you're a threat. And whose say is going to have more weight with the police, yours or an elected official? Now that's the scary part. And at the 912, myself and our group has now, our congressman, Darren Soto, said in the Lakeland Ledger that he is deeming us a threatening and hostile group. Now, that was just right around the time that this law was passed, but look at the inference there. He just has to take one more step, and all of a sudden we're a threat. Cops could be coming in during the meeting, and let me tell you something. When you're at the 912, you're in the safest room in Central Florida, trust me.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, the implications there are very scary. for people. And now, of course, that Biden has deemed all of us terrorists, if we believe that there was election fraud, if we like Trump, and that's, well, we're all, you know, domestic terrorists in his book now. So we're a threat. The implications here are very, very frightening.
So, Glenda,
and I really am encouraging everyone to look into this, get hold of their representatives, and tell them you want this dealt with this year. Go to your legislative delegation meeting. If you don't know what that is, call your local representative and talk to them about the legislative delegation. You need to get in front of those people and tell them what you want done in in specific terminology.
Well, Glenda, thank you for the phone call, and thank you for that information. Thank you for sharing, and thank you for standing up. You, your husband, Royal, and the rest of the Winter Haven 912 group.
Thank you, sir.
We need more groups like you throughout the state who do stand up against this tyranny, against what we are seeing taking place. And I would add, continue the fight, because we have Republican senators here in Florida, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, who want to take this red flag law to a national level.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
That's right.
So we need to continue putting pressure on them. And as you say, let your elected official know in your district that you in no terms will accept this, and that you want them to file legislation or co-sponsor legislation to repeal this horrible law.
They have to be, these guys have to be more scared of you than they are Republican leadership, because Republican leadership is tyrannical. There is no doubt about it. They are corrupt and they are tyrannical. And I hate that is the deal, but it is the deal. It's the truth. And I just really wish, Mike, that we had more representatives like you in Florida. We need a house full of them, just like you. We so appreciate all the work that you've done. You've really sacrificed so much. We really appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Glenda. And thank you for what you do. You, your husband, Royal, and the Winter Haven 912
group.
Yes,
sir.
Thank you for calling
in.
And
yes, sir. Have a great afternoon. God bless you, sir.
Amen. You too. Thank you, Glenda.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard from one of the leaders. She and her husband head up the Winter Haven 912 group, where they do fight for our gun rights on a daily basis. And we need more people in Florida to join them in this fight. And it can be done very easily by contacting your current elected official. Tell them that you want that red flag law repealed, and that you will make sure and hold them accountable whether or not they will sponsor or co-sponsor such a bill and how they will vote for it. And Glenda said it so well, they have to be more afraid of you than they are of leadership, because leadership, if they do not want that bill, then they will do everything that they can to make sure that the red flag laws stay in place. I know this from experience, just like Anthony Sabatini knows it from experience, and Representative Sam Killebrew also knows that from experience. But let's get back to talking about masking children again, something that makes absolutely no sense at all, and something that we need to make sure that we do fight. Because, ladies and gentlemen, if we allow them to use their tyranny to force our children against our will to wear masks, if they force us against our will to get vaccinated, then we are turning more and more into a totalitarian dictatorship, and we must not allow that. We are free Americans. This is the United States of America, where we champion the rights of the individual. There was an article written recently by a gentleman named Paul Alexander. He was writing in an article for the American Institute for Economic Research, and it's about masking children. The title of it is Masking Children: Tragic, Unscientific, and Damaging. And it starts off with the summary. Children do not readily acquire COVID. They have a very low risk. They do not readily spread it to other children or teachers or endanger parents or others at home. This is the settled science. In the rare cases where a child contracts COVID virus, it is very unusual for the child to get severely ill or die. Masking can do positive harm to children. Let me read that again. Masking can do positive harm to children as it can to some adults. But the cost-benefit analysis is entirely different for adults and children, particularly younger children. Whatever arguments there may be for consenting adults, children should not be required to wear masks to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Of course, zero risk is not attainable with or without masks, vaccines, therapeutics, distancing, or anything else medicine may develop or government agencies may impose. It's impossible to have zero risk for a disease. However, settled science says that putting masks on children is harmful. And let me just break from the article just for a bit. Not too long ago, I was sitting for a nationwide exam to obtain a license. And I had to leave the state of Florida because the nearest testing center was in Mobile, Alabama, about a 50-minute drive from Pensacola. So the next closest place in Florida was Tallahassee. So I drive to Alabama to this testing center. As I go to the testing center, there was a sign on the door that said, you must wear a mask to enter this facility. I thought, yeah, sure. You know, I see that sign everywhere. You know, you're going into stores or restaurants, whatever. I have not worn a mask since this whole COVID scare, scandemic, came along. I have not worn a mask except for when I fly, because they won't let you get on a plane without it. And then when you're on a plane, they make such a stink if you take it off. So I wear it while I'm flying. It is very uncomfortable. But I had to wear this mask when I went into this facility as I'm taking this national exam, which they give you 3 hours to complete the exam. I just took under 2 hours to complete it, but you're given 3 hours. And as I'm wearing this mask, I notice for me, I'm not sure about the rest of you, but I notice for me, after wearing a mask for about 5 minutes or so, I notice that it becomes harder to breathe. I'm not getting enough oxygen. And so when you're trying to take a nationwide exam, which, by the way, was not easy, you want your brain operating at full capacity, getting all the oxygen it can. So I would pull the mask down a little bit just beneath my nose so that I could breathe. And then these mask Nazis at this testing center, because they have cameras in there, can see, that's to make sure you don't cheat or anything, they would come running in and tell me to put the mask back on. They did it 3 times in that 2-hour period that I was taking that test. And they made it clear as I was signing all the paperwork to enter in that they had the authority and the power to cut off your exam so that you would not finish. It would be considered a failure and that you would have to come back and repeat the exam. So not only are masks dangerous for adults like myself, but also children. Now, back to this article. How did this blue surgical mask and white cloth mask come to dominate our daily lives? Well, indeed, the surgical mask and the white cloth, often homemade mask, have become the most contentious and quarrelsome symbol and reminder of our battle with COVID-19 and the diseases it causes. The mask has become so politicized that it prevents rational consideration of the evidence, even across political lines, and drives levels of acrimony, invidious actions, disdain, and villainy among wearers to each other who feel threatened by the individual who will not or cannot wear a mask. How dangerous is the virus? Based on studies done by Professor Leonidas of Stanford University, we know that we are dealing with a virus that has an infection fatality rate of 0.05. That means 99.95% of people who catch it will not die. And this is in people who are 70 years and older. It drops dramatically even more than that. This compares quite well to the IFR of most, IFR meaning the infection fatality rate of most influenza viruses, and it's even lower. And yet we have these draconian massive reactions to SARS-CoV-2 have never been employed during influenza season. Again, people, don't take your eye off the ball. Off the ball is restoring election integrity. We're coming up towards the end of the program. I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to encourage you to do this. Do not be discouraged. We are living in times that are exciting, full of turmoil, but think of it this way. It is where we now have the opportunity to fight for this great nation. You think about it. During the times of Paul Revere, and you would think, oh, I would have written with Paul Revere. We are now at a point where we have to fight for this nation, ladies and gentlemen. So if you are one of those who would say, I would have fought with the Revolutionary Army, fight with us now. Stand up. Be encouraged. Lift your voices up in prayer to the living God. He answers prayers. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy the rest of your day and pray for Dr. Youngblood and his son. Thank you so much.
Been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m. for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.